This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's tape number 443, and it's May the 30th, 1980. Another month has gone by. It's side one of the tape. The music on the tape this week is from the play Evita again. Evita is nominated for 11 Tony Awards. Watch some of the scenes they'll have on television Sunday, June the 8th. I think you'll enjoy it. If you haven't seen the play already, be sure to see it. Speaking of Evita, the sister of Che Guevara is traveling in Washington, the United States. She lives in Spain, and she's appealing for help for the 20,000 to 30,000 people that are missing in Argentina. There's 30,000 that have disappeared. Some 15,000 are imprisoned. The others have been murdered by the military junta. And one of the primary characters is the part of Che Guevara in the play. He was brought up in Argentina and then went on to Cuba with Fidel Castro and then into Bolivia, where Che was murdered by the Central Intelligence Agency. It's pretty common knowledge, the investigation and the fact that people involved with murdering him have bragged about the role in killing Che Guevara in the jungle in 1967 in Bolivia. Che has a younger brother who's in jail. He's been in prison since 1975, a 10-year sentence. She says mostly because he does work with labor unions and because of the Guevara name, the mother had been arrested. His brother is suffering. He's 36 years old from hepatitis and anemia and other diseases while in prison. And she was forced to leave the country. She has been threatened by the Argentine Anti-Communist Alliance. It's a death squad that threatened to kill her. She was forced to leave there, and her father lives in Cuba. Another brother moved away. She's living in Spain. And she's come to the United States to ask for help because of the repression. The family and all their associates are under tremendous effort to free the political prisoners that number approximately 30,000. She says there's more than 30,000 people that have disappeared in Argentina. 15,000 have been imprisoned, and of course, the human rights group have been working on that for a long time, but she's in the country. I hope she comes to the West Coast. I would like to hear her or meet her, and she's fighting hard to try and get some help for everyone in Argentina, and they themselves have suffered terribly through all of this. Che Guevara, in his writings and experiences, saw the United States as the chief source of imperialism for all the other Americas, and he worked with Fidel Castro on that, and I think he was right in his summation of what is going on with the labor unions and repressions of native populations all over the world. Che's name still rings such magic that all the family live in terror and can't live in Argentina at all because of what Che Guevara means to the masses of the population who still keep his picture and talk about him. Jack Anderson had an article May 18th, it was, on selective justice, and he barely hit it. Some of the areas I've been talking about, Jimmy Carter, the Carter Peanut Warehouse connections, and the finanglings of the finances down in Georgia, the Burt Lance affair, the complicated case that the jurors released Burt Lance. They were bored to death and couldn't understand the banking finagling. They were sympathetic to Lance in the first place. The Robert Vesco influence buying scandal that the Justice Department is hushing up with Georgia intimate Charles Curbo, Carter's pal, the Hamilton Jordan narcotics case, the cocaine connections, the White House drug connections of Dr. Peter Byrne and drug legislation, the public integrity mystery. The Federal Times reported the integrity chief Thomas Henderson Jr. refused to prosecute more than a dozen cases against Carter administration officials, and then the selective abscam investigations that are being covered up, and various politicians are getting off the hook. The Justice Department is circumventing all of the links of Jimmy Carter to these very important narcotic connections and scandals as they keep mounting. Jack Anderson finally comes out with an article that won selective justice with one bracket, Carter Peanut Warehouse, another the Lance Affair, the other the Vesco, the other the drug connections with Byrne, another category, the public integrity mystery, and another abscam, and so forth. In order to understand modern history or the way the news is folding, you have to put things into outlines and columns and add up the columns. It isn't the single stories that make the news, and that's the way I've done my work. That's the way I wrote my published articles. The ones I like the best are done in outline form. Forget the literary embellishment that goes with it. Just list the points, 1, 2, 3, and 4, And you have to do that sometimes, and this is what Anderson is doing with Jimmy Carter. Now, if he would get his outline and do the connections of Ronald Reagan to Paul LaSalt, to the Summa Organization, to the Central Intelligence Agency, to the casinos in Nevada, the organized crime, to the Hoover School of the Tsarist Russians, the Nazis, the fascists, if he did a background on Reagan to be equally as strict in his analysis of the two candidates, it would be wonderful. But right now, Jack Anderson, who is a devout Mormon, who has a restaurant business or did with Madame Chenault of the CIA Flying Tigers fame, who also brought narcotics into this country, if Jack Anderson were really fair, he would attack LaSalt. But LaSalt worked with the Howard Hughes Organization, which was the Mormon mafia, set up with an entourage of Mormons that were a cover for a Central Intelligence operation. So that Anderson's pecking away, while it's very good and accurate, is always selective. He does a good job of part of the story, but the other half that protects his interests or his informants or his investments is always held from the people. And that is why we get into such dangerous situations, is that we rely on these analytical journalists and newspaper people to tell us the story, and they only tell us half the story. I never am too concerned about the candidates or the nominations going way back, and that's why I refuse to talk about the elections per se too much, is because I know, as this book is coming out that I mentioned last week, I know the candidates are selected a long time ago, and anyone else in their way is pushed aside, murdered, slipped out with whether it's scotch tape or whatever. But one of the most interesting parts of the election year that has to be investigated, and I want to go at length with you as much as I can, is the voting machine. There's never been a really good analysis of the voting machine. But in New Hampshire, when Lyndon LaRoche came out so badly in his attempt to become president of the United States, he's running for the Labor Caucus, which isn't a popular group anyway, but he does have one area where he has a footing, and all of a sudden he noticed, evidently, that the nuts and bolts of the voting machine are involved in fraud. And I don't think that the article in New Solidarity is a sour grapes article. I think it has information that has to be investigated, and I'm going to pass it on to you because there has never been a good description of who owns the voting machine companies. Now, in the New Solidarity, this is April the 25th, just this last month, there is a story about Mr. LaRoche knowing that he had a certain amount of votes, that there was a roster of over 20,000 voters in an area, and yet when the tally came in, it was very low. And the article goes on that there is a cover-up procedure in the voting machine, and that somebody came to him and tipped him off about how the voting machines are fixed. One of my pet peeves is that we can't go in with our right hand or our left hand and stamp that little X anymore, that we have to use a computer, and that I know computers can be arranged to make mistakes in these tallies by a manipulation of or sort, and it suggests here that a part is shaved off or tampered with that makes the voting come out different than what the person intended when they punched the little card. In this article on the voting machine, the nuts and bolts, there is a subtitle, Company Men. I'm going to read from this article now and share it with you. Take the International Election System Corporation, headquartered in Burlington, New Jersey. Now, it'd be interesting to know how close Burlington, New Jersey is to all his other crooks that are surfacing in the New Jersey area that are linked not only to Abscam, but the casinos, and to IG Farben, and again, the Robert Vesco connections, and the Alpha 56, and the Anticaster Cubans, and Princeton, New Jersey, with its testing for all the universities and occupations in the United States. New Jersey is a very interesting state. And in Burlington, New Jersey, there is the International Election System. The firm followed what was known as the Shoup, S-H-O-U-P, voting machine. In 1950s, convicted stock manipulator Lewis Wolfson bought out Shoup. He bought the Shoup voting machine. It was a natural investment for him, since Wolfson raised thoroughbreds, bankrolled election campaigns, counted the big names of politics, sports, and show business among his friends. In 1964, when Wolfson was under investigation for various corrupt practices, and this was Lyndon Johnson's closest buddy, he went to two law firms to represent him. One was Arnold, Fortas, and Porter, course, Abe Fortas was on the Supreme Court, and he was the lawyer who helped landslide Lyndon Johnson win in 1948, a very controversial election at the time where the senatorial race was changed. There were 200 lost votes, Johnson votes, 3 days after the election. And Abe Fortas has been a long friend of Lyndon Johnson. The other firm to represent Mr. Wolfson was Shea, S-H-E-A, Gallup, and Gould and Klemenko, headed by the New York power broker William A. Shea, who was chairman of the Shoup voting machine. Now, Mr. Wolfson, when he gets into trouble, goes to the law firm of Arnold, Fortas, and Porter, and then he goes to Shea, Gallup, Gould, and Klemenko in New York City. I don't know if Gallup is the Gallup poll that determines how we vote or what we vote or tells us what to vote. If this office involves the family or a member of Gallup polls, the Gallup poll people are also very politically conservative, arch conservatives, and I have filed away some articles on the Gallups. But here's a law firm, Shea, Gallup, Gould, and Klemenko, that was headed by a New York power broker by the name of William Shea of this firm, who was chairman of the Shoup voting machine company. So is Gallup related, that law office, to the voting machine company? The article goes on, in the early 1960s, and of course the takeover of the government was in 1963 when John Kennedy was killed, and then the voting machines could be manipulated, maybe earlier, but in the early 1960s, Mr. Wolfson, Louis Wolfson, the close friend of Lyndon Johnson, involved with politics, sports, and show business, and so forth, sold Shoup, which he had bought, to the General Battery and Ceramic Company, which is now linked to British-dominated zinc mining. And one member of their society, according to this article, The New Solidarity, the Venerable Knights of St. John of Jerusalem, is on its board. William A. Shea is now involved with Shea Stadium, the New York Mets, horse racing, and is General Battery's chairman. I've talked on the last few tapes, they're going back on Madison Square Gardens and sports and espionage or organized crime links, the possibility of this can of worms, and you have William Shea of Shea Stadium and the New York Mets, and this gentleman as part, Mr. William Shea, is chairman of the Shoup voting machine. According to this article, in the late 60s, Shoup was acquired then by Mack Rodin, whose bank is Marine Midland of Buffalo, New York, and then New Solidarity makes the links of that bank to Hong Kong and Shanghai, where the golden triangle of the drug trade is in Asia. That would be very convenient to have the voting machine offices in New Jersey, the organized crime nest building up with the casinos in New Jersey and the Buffalo connections, the Mack Rodin Company Shoup acquired, is now part of the International Electronics System Corporation. The corporate history of the other voting machine, and there's another company that makes it, the AVM of Jamestown, New York, is just as enlightening. Rockwell International bought the company in the late 50s. The late 50s are when Richard Nixon was vice president, going to run for president, lost the election to John Kennedy. We were still, I believe, manually voting at that time. And then Kennedy was killed, and all of a sudden these slick push-button machines come in. And this article refers to the late 50s. I'd like to know if it was 59 and a half, because remember, in April 1960, Robert Mayhew from the Howard Hughes Organization was sitting with members of organized crime, again from New Jersey, New York, Nevada, Chicago, Florida, and making arrangements for assassination hit teams, that the federal government would work with organized crime with the Murder Incorporated that went east, west, and south to the Bahamas, and of course was international because of the narcotic connections. AVM of Jamestown, New York, was taken over by the Rockwell International interest. They bought the company in the late 50s, but it didn't protect the AVM from a well-orchestrated series of voting machine scandals that were carried out in 1969 to 73. Those are those controversial years of the Watergate, and after Robert Kennedy's assassination and Martin Luther King's, there were scandals of the Shoup and the AVM by the Justice Department's Organized Crime Strike Force. Now, I don't know, and I didn't save the articles of Those scandals, I wasn't aware of them at that time, the voting machine scandals. I should have been. I did have articles, I had them filed back, that Venezuela was a testing place for voting machines, and I mentioned on tapes or radio shows for a long time a scandal of voting machines and sending them down there for a South American election. But this article says there were investigations in 69 and to 73 by the Justice Department Organized Crime Strike Force. During one of the scandals involving the AVM voting machine, AVM hired Shoup's old firm of Arnold and Porter, the same one that had Abe Fortas as a justice of the Supreme Court that then stepped down, Lyndon Johnson's friend, and he helped them as their election specialist. Then during the voting machine scandals, they brought in Mitchell Rogovan, the attorney whose name is in the news all of the time, who turned these scandals of the voting machine kickbacks to Venezuela. Now, this article is important because it talks about Venezuela, and that's where I first got wind of the suspicion of irregularities in the voting machine scandal, going way, way back to Venezuela, and then the whole affair was swept under the rug. Rogovan then went on to be special counsel to the Central Intelligence Agency. And AVM, the voting machine company, and Shoup are moving on to the next election. They control the machines that you vote into. Evidently, they make the machines. Now, if it is true that the voting machines are made by Rockwell International and lawyers from the CIA and the Lyndon Johnson administration and the White House, or the possible links to Gallup and Gallup polls, it is scandalous. I have really hoped through the years, the last 4 years or so, I've mentioned it many, many times to various people personally, and I don't know if I've emphasized enough on the tapes, that the voting machines should be thrown out. They're worked in such a way that when your polls close in the East Coast, they tell us who's president. If it's 3 hours earlier out here, we don't even have to go to vote. All except the local politicians, decisions are made in the East, the national. And the voting machine scandal maybe should be investigated more, and maybe because LaRoche was running for president and he realized how he was burned, he got into this subject. If he goes too far, he'll find his old buddies who've been manipulating a lot of other affairs. So I doubt if he'll go too far on this, but I think somebody else should pick up the ball and investigate these companies, Microdean and Rockwell. I'll put the names on the printed sheet that accompanies this tape, and maybe we should do much more work into the law firms that I've mentioned that are involved with the voting machine and just find how closely they are related to the President of the United States and to the racetrack crowd and the world of politics and of sports and the New Jersey group, where the headquarters, New Jersey, Philadelphia, New York, the crime syndicate families are centered, as well as the headquarters in Vegas and Arizona and California. Before they moved west, they were on the East Coast, and it would be important to know that the links of this gang to the voting machine, because they not only have killed the President of the United States in office and killed the senator, his brother went the night of his primary victory in California and shot and tried to kill George Wallace the night of his primary victory in Maryland and in Michigan and dumped the chances. Well, Ted Kennedy never had a chance with the voting machine even, but who knows what they can do with these machines. I've suspected for a long time that they could file or do them a certain way so that when you punch it, the vote isn't going the way you think it's going. If a handful of people can lie about governments that they put into power all over the world and make a private war in Cambodia without telling Congress or any other person and kill hundreds of thousands of people without your getting access to that information and lying about the murder of a president, they have the technology and the mentality and the ability to manufacture these machines and suit them any way they want to make sure that if it comes to push and shove, the candidate they want will get the most buttons that day. Last week I talked about the incredible and Mr. Brzezinski with his Defense Department special agents inside the White House being armed and the dangerous procedure of having this man have a small entourage of his own around the President of the United States. There was another article recently that came out from New York, an Associated Press story, that makes me concerned about the communication systems in this country or the possibility of a coup and jamming the systems The article came out about a school in New York City. It's a private school. The story begins, Classroom Computer Mystery, the Great Dalton School Computer Tie-In Mystery. The FBI is seeking a possible little Einstein who may have used a classroom computer to jam the New York City linked to 21 Canadian computer systems. People were outraged that it could happen, said the school teacher. The investigation is just being taking place now, and I'm sure we won't find out any more about it when it's done than we did the voting machine scandals in the late 60s and early 70s, or the Venezuela scandals. But the FBI is investigating. The FBI says that apparently somebody found a way to tap into a link between two communication networks, the GTE, Telenet, and the Communications Corporation of Vienna, Virginia, and Bell Canada's DataPack system. That's 21 Canadian firms and universities are run by a computer system that they have access to this computer system. The FBI is investigating how the computers were tapped, and one company said many of their computer files have been destroyed. They wanted to get a search warrant to go into the New York telephone company, and when they checked out where this was coming from, it was located in this private school, the Dalton School, right in Manhattan on 89th Street, 108 East 89th Street. And they identified two plastic bags they found that were filled with computer printouts and a computer log sheet. And the cover-up was, we don't know if we have a frustrated professor or a little Einstein school. The Dalton School is a private school on Manhattan's exclusive east side run by a headmaster, Helga Gould, that's G-O-U-L-D. Again, I think of Jean Harris, the headmistress with the double life, who is linked to the Tarnower murder in Westchester, being the school ma'am, the head of a private school. This school has 1,200 students ages 3 to 18 years of age. There's 180 teachers, administrators, and clerks, and the headmaster wouldn't comment on how they had access to four computer terminals, and evidently this school is a front. They tapped into the data pack Telenet link that requires the address of the computer to be tapped, identification codes, and passwords, and they got a hold of them. And, of course, they were blaming it on the 3- and 4-year-olds. They didn't know how people could get access to this information. As I say, they were looking for what they call a little Einstein. This computer at the Dalton School in New York that acquainted the children with the use of mysteries in the electronic age in some way is tied into this detailed, complicated computer system that involves GTE, GenNet, as I say, Communications Corporation in Virginia, subsidiary of General Telephone Electronics Corporation, and up to Bell of Canada. Access can be achieved by a telephone at a computer terminal. They have to use a password, an identification number, and so forth, and the telephone company located in their private school on 89th Street. Canadian computer subscribers were affected. The University of Toronto, Alberta, Waterloo, Concordia University, Bell Canada, Honeywell, and other corporations were all affected, according to an affidavit. Interesting way to jam computers, and it's similar to the book Sabotage that I've referred to on the tapes. Goodness knows where there are people located who have access to massive computers. At the time of the Kennedy assassination, the switchboards were cut off at the White House. This is a common technique that's been used over and over again at times of emergency. It's impossible to get through to the lines. A young person, a 20-year-old man who testified last year at the trial of two members of the Gambino family, it had to do with the killing of James Eppoletto in New York City and his son, James A. Eppoletto, the two Eppolettos. The man who testified at this trial as a witness in the trial was found shot to death in Brooklyn, bullets in his head, riddled with bullets. His name was Patrick Penny. That little obituary was not on the page of the usual death in the New York Times. That article about Patrick Penny is just 3 inches long, and I found in the second section on page 3, May the 14th, that the witness in this trial, the man who testified against the men who were charged with a gangland slaying of the Eppolettos, the father and the son, he has been murdered, and the man that he testified against, Anthony Gaggi, and Peter Piacenti were convicted of lesser crimes than murdering these two people. You have to go back again to the Maxine Cheshire article. This was December the 2nd, 1979, just at the beginning of this year, about the White House party, the connections of Agent John Ellsworth of Secret Service, FBI, CIA, the counterintelligence agent who was in the White House with Roslyn and Jimmy Carter, a long article in the Washington Post that I did on my tapes on Eppolito and the murders, that these two men had to be murdered because they were so close to Roslyn Carter. Young Eppolito had had his picture taken with Roslyn Carter in that Cities for Schools, a charity affair, and they were lining up contributions from labor leaders and so forth and Teamsters, but they were too close to the Jimmy Carter White House team and were photographed with Roslyn Carter, so these mobsters were shot down to death last October. And the Washington Post had, Maxine Cheshire had an article about that, and also the Gaddafi connections to Jimmy Carter and Vesco, the same article. A complicated can of worms, but the point was that the Eppolitos had to be murdered because they were photographed with the Carters and they were too close to the Carter administration. Then the man that testified against the murderers was killed this last week, and the men that murdered these two people got off on lesser charges. Again, a shocking kind of link to the White House, to organized crime, to the Gambino family. They were members of the Gambino family. There's endless links of the mafia, the Georgia mafia, the Jimmy Carter connections, the Gambino family, and to many of these violences or deaths that are taking place. So the witness to the slaying, the man who testified, he's dumped with a bunch of bullets in his head, 9 shots in his head. The two that did the murders of the Eppolitos got lesser charges and weren't charged with murder, and now this witness is wiped out. And it doesn't make much sense to a person to read this second section, New York Times, tucked away in a little tiny column at the back of the page, except when you read the Washington Post and you put pieces together from various newspapers, you realize the connections to not only to the White House, to many of the scandals that are coming out now, the links of Gambino to Sindona, Michael Sindona, and the Vatican and the CIA. There is a network of organized crime and White House, public officials, Justice Department, police departments, the courts, the judges seem to be under total control of the crime figures and the witnesses to the trial who finger the murderers to get gunned down like dogs on the street with hardly a connection to how important it was to identify who was doing this killing and why they had to be killed at the time. There was a fire at the UCLA campus last week. The Orthodox Jewish house, the Chabad house, burned down on Galey. $1 million damage, 3 Jewish students killed. At first they said it was arson because there were death threats before. Then they said it was bad electrical wire. And then there was another article on death threats that they had received there at this house, and 3 Jewish students were killed at UCLA. That's right, in the heart of Los Angeles, the University of California. As the Los Angeles Times described, fire kills 3 in Jewish group's headquarters, $1 million damage, 2 others were injured, and they suspect arson. I mentioned last week the leaks coming out about our Iranian invasion and other matters from Hong Kong. Birch Bayh asked the FBI to investigate leaks on missions to Iran. That was May the 8th in the Washington Post. And Evans and Novak had an article May the 7th, intelligence leaks are out of control. It may just be that those leaks are saving us from an atomic war or a Holocaust, and that those people who are making the leaks are doing their best to stop a World War III. That's what I think they're doing. On the other side of this tape, I'm going to run down a series of articles that have been on my desk just in the past 2 weeks that I want to share with you before I put them into the files and lose track of them. And instead of staying on one specific subject, I'm just going to give you some of the most interesting highlights, and some we'll get back to at a later time, but I don't, as I say, don't want to lose track of them right now. Thank you.
I'm adored with love.